the last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Let's start the week trending, and we have Roe McDermott, and to start, Donal O'Donoghue, Managing Director of Sanderson Recruitment. And could you imagine, after all the fuss that there has been about vaccines, quite rightly too, given that it could relieve us from this COVID-19 misery, can you imagine if it turns out that mouthwash is actually an effective treatment for COVID-19? Tell us a little bit about this, because, I mean, it's hardly the case that everyone could be going around carrying a bottle of mouthwash every day and spitting out on a regular basis, is it?
Yeah, the early indicators are good. They've done some testing in a laboratory, which they've tested some of the over-the-counter mouthwash that's available in Ireland and the UK, and the early indicators are good. So they're now going to clinical trials. So they've seen that this mouthwash that contains, CPC-based mouthwash, which is whatever the particular component in it, but that the trials have been good initially. They're now going to test it on humans to see if mouthwash, together with washing our hands, can give us an extra layer of relief. But it's encouraging, isn't it, that they've got Dr. Nick Clayton, who's a specialist periodontologist, and he believes that the research is very valuable. So Cardiff University are working on a clinical trial now, and who knows, it might just, between now and that vaccine hitting the market, it might just give us an extra layer of protection.
Rob McDermott, I was just wondering, is there any alcohol in mouthwash that might be part of the defence? Because, and I'm only speculating here, and I have no scientific background to be suggesting this, but, you know, if alcohol can actually deal with COVID-19, that would be a great excuse for a lot of people to have a few drinks in the open air over the next few weeks, wouldn't it?
I was about to say, what are you planning for your weekend? That you're looking for this excuse. I think that has been shown in like alcohol sprays, etc., that people are using to wipe down counters, and people were doing, particularly at the start of the pandemic, were kind of spraying their groceries and stuff with alcoholic prints. So there might be a bit of a justification in that, but I think what you're looking for is more of an emotional and mental justification, Matt, and I'm sorry, but I just can't give that to you today.
I don't even drink, so it's not like I am looking for an excuse, Ro. Ro, I want to stay with you, because there's a story that I've been having to deal with today in RTE Radio, and I presume they will be doing so on television as well. And it's not that we're jumping up and down in pleasure at discomfort that has been felt by our rival, but it is a legitimate news story that broke in the Irish Sun today, showing photographs of a number of RTE stars in the presence of a departing colleague, but certainly not, it would seem, engaging in social distancing when standing for photographs. For those who aren't aware of it, Ro, tell us about this particular story, please.
Yeah, so the national broadcaster did last night confirm that a small number of officials and on-screen talent attended this low-key party held on the Montrose site earlier this month. And it was for a colleague who, there was an impromptu farewell for a colleague who was retiring after 40 years. And the official statement is saying that it was people who were already in the grocery building were told that this was happening, that this colleague was leaving. And so there was a kind of unofficial gathering where everyone said goodbye. But then they posed for photos, and the photos have been released now, and there's people like Brian Dobson, there's political correspondent Paul Cunningham, there's 9 o'clock news presenter Arlene Dunn, there's John Williams, Hilary McGarren, Bodney Kofik, and the photos are going around, and I think everybody's just having a moment of really. And I think what's interesting is what people are focusing on this, and again, look, we're in essentially our second lockdown. I think everybody is tired. Everybody has made such huge sacrifices over the past 8 months. And so when stories like this come out, it can be really disheartening. But I think, first of all, I'm really trying to not judge people for doing things accidentally or without thinking. And I think the focus is a lot on the photographs, and people are saying, how can you be so stupid posing for photographs? And particularly some people are photographed while standing on mats that say 2 metres apart, and clearly on 2 metres apart. And a part of, I can absolutely understand having a brain blank. No, a lot of people haven't been in positions where they've been asked to pose for photographs during the pandemic. And I can understand someone going, oh, here, let's get a photo, and automatically just moving towards people. I think what's tripping me up here is, first of all, the idea that people walked into this room where there were a lot of people. Now, again, the official statement has said this doesn't count as a close contact. It was a very brief amount of time. People were social distancing generally during this room while they were saying goodbye to this colleague. But I think it's the lack of leadership, that no one walked in and said, should we do this outside maybe and just keep this safer? And that when one person got a photograph taken, nobody else said, actually, this is probably, let's not do this, or let's do there are steps up to the RTE radio building outside. Nobody said, let's do it outside on the steps where we were behind each other. We can keep a bit of distance and still get a photograph. And I think it's that idea that there is no leadership happening. And again, I can completely forgive people for having a bit of a moment of a brain lapse and going, this is just an unprecedented situation. Nobody has asked me to pose for a photograph during a pandemic. I thought hopping in and out of it would be fine. But because there are people who are on our TV screens, on our radio, talking about this all the time, you just expect people to be more mindful and not to let the girls in that way.
Donal O'Donoghue, another great opportunity though for people to do a bit of finger pointing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think Ro is probably right on this one. I just wonder, is this just indicative of the COVID fatigue that's settling in around the country at the moment? But I think you're right. If it's the national broadcaster and these are the people that are communicating the message for us to remain vigilant as COVID fatigue sets in, you know. But then it's hard to think about it. You know, is it a situation that's happening in workplaces around the country at the moment, or you know? It's difficult, but I think they probably need to be held to a higher standard.
You didn't see George Lee in the photographs, did you? I mean, that was quite obvious that he wasn't there. Listener says, RT Photos is a non-story, let it go. I don't know who that's coming from. It's a story that they've actually had to cover themselves on air today. And of course, remember as well that Sean O'Rourke, because he attended the Oireachtas Golf Society dinner, it wasn't given a new programme on RT as actually had been intended. Although, again, people are drawing distinctions between the nature of that Golf Society dinner, a sit-down event attended by over 80 people by comparison with this apparently different situation here. Another listener says, do the same rules as Golfgate apply to the media? OK, let's move on to other things. Ro, tell us about the Pope Francis's Instagram account and what it likes.
Well, someone is having a very blessed modelling career because there is a Brazilian model and a Twitch streamer called Natalia Garabato, and her Instagram account had a photograph of her scantily clad in kind of a sexy schoolgirl-like uniform. And on the 13th of November, there was apparently a like from Pope Francis's Instagram account on this photograph. Now, I could spend the entire show talking about the idea of the sexy schoolgirl outfit and why we continue to sexualize this, which I think is a very, very odd and normalized thing in society. But this has started this conversation of, oh my God, has the Pope liked a sexy photograph? Now, sources close to the Vatican have told the media that a number of people have access to the account, which would be very normal. I actually do not believe, strangely enough, that Pope Francis is sitting there on his Instagram account. I do believe he is a social media manager. But I think what's interesting is people are pretending that this is scandalous and pretending that this is a story, and people are still clinging to this myth that, again, I genuinely don't believe that this is Pope Francis on Instagram, but they're still clinging to this myth that people in the church are beyond their sexuality, which the church has disproven time and time again through priests and religious people having consensual relationships, through their sexual behavior, through abuse. I genuinely do not care if the Pope liked a sexy photograph of an adult model. That is not a harmful action. But what is harmful is being the face of an institution that has for centuries policed people's sexuality, presented as sin, demonized women, demonized LGBTQ people, prevented sex education, helped the spread of HIV in developing countries by dissuading people from using contraception and saying that's a sin. What's harmful is the hypocrisy around sexuality and the pretense that sexuality is inherently dangerous, the pretense that priests and bishops and even the Pope are above us mere mortals because they somehow rise above their sexuality. Firstly, they repeatedly proven that they don't rise above it. And secondly, weaponizing sexuality, that those who embrace it in healthy ways and say that they are somehow less than those who repress it and judge it and hypocritically engage in it, is ludicrous. And I have a lot of respect for a lot of the stances Pope Francis has taken. I will always have limited respect for someone who chooses to be the face of an institution that has caused an almost unfathomable level of damage. But I just hope this conversation moves beyond this binary of sexuality is bad, repressing sexuality is good. And Pope Francis, more than any other pope, he has embraced humanity and humility. And I think a great thing that could come out of this incident is having the humility to recognise that for most people, sexuality is a part of their human existence. And that's okay. So again, I think it's a bit of a non-story, but I hope we turn it into a more nuanced conversation.
I tell you what, we actually hadn't planned to discuss it, and I'm going to give you a few minutes to maybe gather a thought on it, Ro, but we do have the story as well from yesterday that was discussed in the Doyle about Irish women having their photographs leaked online deliberately by third parties and the distress that causes them. So I might ask you about that in a moment. Ro McDermott, I think you're on a better phone line now. So I just want to ask you if you briefly, I presume you're following this story of there's apparently now next Tuesday, the government going to rubber stamp new laws to protect women mainly, but sometimes also men from having personal photographs, intimate videos put online by others without their consent.
Yeah, and this form, well, it's not a crime, unfortunately, and this has been a discussion for so long that it absolutely needs to be. It's often referred to as revenge porn, and that's a really damaging moniker that we really need to replace. This is called image-based sexual abuse, because the idea of revenge porn indicates, first of all, that's the person involved. For example, this is usually men uploading photos of women without their consent. The idea of revenge usually represents this as the woman has done something wrong and the man is taking action against it, which is usually absolutely not the case. This is just men enacting misogyny and doing something incredibly harmful and violent. And the idea of porn is a professional undertaking with consenting adults. And a lot of the time, revenge porn is upskirt photos. It's intimate photos that were meant to be shared with one person, and so it's the women have not consented to other people seeing these. So this is image-based sexual violence or sexual abuse, and there has been a huge incident where thousands and thousands of photographs of women, some women who were asleep, women who shared intimate photos with their partners, some women who are using OnlyFans and uploading photos of themselves, all of these were collected and uploaded to one server, and a huge group of men were sharing these photos with each other. They were uploading them online in different spaces. They were encouraging each other to do so without these women's consent. And it's a huge violation of the women involved, in some cases who were sleeping, who weren't aware that these photos were being taken. But even for women who were using platforms like OnlyFans, who were uploading photos of themselves for a specific audience and sometimes making money out of this, what's so clear here is about this non-consensual theft and sharing of these images is that this isn't about porn. It's not about desire. It's not about sex. It's not about men trying to see women's bodies. Men can go online any day of the week and see women's bodies naked on porn sites for free. They can subscribe to OnlyFans accounts. They can pay to see images of people. They can buy pornography. They can enjoy it respectfully. But what this was a coordinated, systematic effort to take away women's power, control and consent. Because this isn't about sex or desire or porn. It's about these men despising the fact that some of these women could feel empowered in their bodies, in their sexuality, in their own source of income, and abusing and violating them in order to try to take away that power. So it's not about desiring women, it's about hating them. This is misogyny in action. And then for the incidents of photos that were taken when partners were asleep or sharing photographs that were meant to be shared with one person and uploading them, it's about men not holding each other accountable and saying, I don't have permission to see this. Why are you showing me this? Why are you doing this? And again, I mean, sexual violence affects men, but these types of situations primarily affect women because we don't have the same level of shame around men's bodies. And women are not making these coordinated efforts to abuse and shame women. This is men. So this really needs to be a conversation, first of all, to make sure that this is a crime and it can be processed as a crime, because unfortunately victims of this...
And I think that's actually something we will be doing on Tuesday, because apparently the government is going to move for the cabinet meeting on Tuesday for the immediate enactment of a bill that has gone through in Doyle, so this should be outlawed already. Just in the time we've left to us, Donal O'Donoghue, this has been a week as well in which there's been a lot of attention focused on Dublin Zoo. An extraordinary sum of money raised after an appeal to save the zoo because of income has dropped so dramatically because of the closure resulting from COVID-19. But it seems like there's a lot of money going out as a result of a remarkable legal action taken over a tapir attack which took place 7 years ago. Tell us about this.
Yeah, you might remember it was back in 2013, and there was a terrible incident that happened. A little girl called Katie was at the zoo with her family, with her parents and her brothers, and they had arranged through a friend to be allowed into the enclosure. And apparently the little girl, Katie, you know, squealed with delight, and the tapir attacked and, you know, picked her up, put her in its mouth and shook her violently, and she received injuries. Her mother very bravely kind of got between herself and the animal and so on. But they just this week, the two of the brothers received €33,000 each in the circuit court. And a couple of years previously, the other brother, Rory, received €25,000 in the circuit court. So that's in total, €91,000 have been paid out for the psychological harm to the siblings that were watching. And then there is a claim that is in the High Court. The parents have a claim in there as well, as does Katie, because, of course, the circuit court is limited to awards of €60,000. So it obviously was very distressing for everybody involved. But when we think about Ireland and the claim society that we have, there certainly has been a lot paid out to date, and it sounds as though, if we're looking at what's happened already, it sounds as though there may be more to come.
Okay, although I can't blame those people given the trauma that they suffered from actually taking legal action, and surprised in some respects that these things haven't been settled. Let me just stay with you as well. Are you keeping an eye on what's good, the row between Colleen Rooney and Rebecca Vardy, which has gone to court yesterday? We were hearing from Nick Ferrari on this. Is this a story that you're taking seriously?
Oh, I think it's very entertaining. What were they calling it? Wagatha Christie. So the background to this, Colleen Rooney felt that a lot of the private stuff she was sharing on Instagram was getting leaked. So she performed a sting operation where she, you know, the way you can limit your stories to only being seen by certain followers. So she put out some fake stories, and she suspected that Rebecca Vardy was the person that was leaking the stuff. And she put out three fake stories that were only visible to Rebecca Vardy, that were then leaked to The Sun. And then she took screenshots of it and she shared it, you know, that the leaks came from the account of Mrs. Vardy. So Vardy is suing Rooney for libel for £1 million. But just today, she lost the first aspect of that, because Colleen Rooney lost the first aspect, because her argument was that she never said it was Rebecca Vardy. She said it was Rebecca Vardy's account that had shared them. But the judge today ordered Rooney to pay costs of £29,000 because he felt any reasonable person would say that she was asserting that it was Vardy herself who had said it. So they are they're going to be going for mediation, I think, and negotiation. But this could potentially end up costing quite a bit of money. And it's very difficult to ascertain who's in the right and who's in the wrong here. But certainly it's been entertaining, to say the least. The guys are trying to stay out of it. They've been unfollowing each other on Twitter, Wayne Rooney and Jamie Vardy. I think they are now refollowing each other and letting the Wags get on with it.
All right, I'm actually going to have to leave it there. We've run out of time. Thank you very much, Donal O'Donoghue, Managing Director of Sanderson Recruitment, and Ro McDermott, movie editor with Hot Press and advice columnist in the Irish Times Magazine, for being with us as well.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.